Excuse me? Hello? Hello?
Hang on a second. Hold on. Start the show.
Welcome to Take Two Radio. I'm Pam, your host, and I'm so very, very happy to have with me today as my special guest co-host, my good friend Mike Lidskin. Hello, Mike.
Hey, Pam. How are you doing?
I'm great. I had to think about that for a second. No.
I know. Well, we're just talking about that. We're both at, coming to the realization that it's fall, and we're in very different parts of the country, and I was loving it, and I told you I was going to go apple picking up in the mountains today, and you had a choice response for me.
Yeah, go on your apple picking way, Mike. Yeah, that's your bag, not mine. No.
Yeah.
Bag
I'll make
apples.
Some applesauce or something.
Is that what you do? You guys, you know, use them for cooking, like apple pies and applesauce and whatever you make out of apples.
Yeah, a little bit of that. You know, it's funny because you don't think of that in California, but we're in Sacramento and we're right next to the foothills of the Sierra. So there's this place called Apple Hill, and there's a whole bunch of orchards up there. So this time of year, you just go up there and you pick them, and you can buy pies or apple fritters or whatever up there, or you can just bring a bushel home and cook them yourself. So it's kind of neat. It's not a thing that you think of very much in California, so we just relish our chance to savor fall.
Yeah, you'd think about that more like probably Washington as far as the West Coast is concerned. I mean, it's where a lot of apples come from, but not necessarily think about it from California. It would be more, to me, I would think about you guys picking oranges or, you know, some kind of avocados or something like that. So,
that's true.
Yeah.
I've got an orange tree in my backyard, and I'll send you a picture of me next to it in December when they're ready.
Oh, okay, yeah. In December. That's good, Mike. Rub it in. Yeah, when we're in 16 feet of snow, but that's okay.
Oh, I know. And we have oranges up the yin-yang, yeah.
Is that when they bear fruit? Is do it like a couple times a year or just when they're ready?
That's when the navel oranges come out. We have navel oranges and tangerine tree, too, and it seems to be a December, January thing for some reason. I'm not sure why that is. I don't know if that's the case for all citrus because there's citrus that grows year-round other places. I think Florida citrus might be a different story. But, yeah, here I think you'll see the oranges on the trees in December, strangely enough.
Yeah, that is funny. But, of course, that's, you know, you guys are warmer than we are. So that's not unusual for you. I remember when I first went to California, I was 13 years old. My mom and my brother and my sister went out there and stayed by my aunt's house. And she had, oh, my gosh, I don't know how many fruit trees out in her backyard. And we just had a grand old time picking it and eating it and all that stuff. And my aunt finally said, you guys better slow down because it's going to be hitting you soon.
It's
kind of
neat.
But there's nothing like fresh fruit, you know.
No. I mean, go out in the back and pick breakfast. I mean, that's pretty unique. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, definitely. Especially since I don't have any fruit trees. When we moved here to where I'm at now, there was a tree, but it was half dead, unfortunately. So we had to cut it down. But never thought about, you know, planting another one because by the time it got big enough to bear any fruit, I would be an old person. So
you could just go to the store.
So I'm not sure where our guest Planetary Blues are at yet. Someone had called in asking for Mike, but I'm not sure who that was. They hung up, and I didn't know if they meant you, Mike, or Mike from the band.
That's right. There is a Mike in the band. So, yeah. I'm guessing him, but we'll see in a few minutes. How many are we going to have with us today? How many?
I don't know. I don't know. I know that when I posted it on their Facebook page, I believe it was Martin from the band said that he's taking the day off, and Sundays he doesn't talk, so it's all up to Michael to talk. So
oh.
I know we're getting at least Michael, let's put it that way.
Okay. Funny. Now, do you realize that if we took Sundays off from talking, we wouldn't have a show here?
I know, right? They'd be out of luck. They'd be out of luck. That's it, yeah. And you do yours on Saturdays. And oh, my gosh, do I have a full week ahead of me. I have this interview today on here. Monday, for my music show at 3 p.m. Eastern time, I normally play Monday music with all the different indies, but I have so much going on that I had to rethink that and reprioritize. And I'm going to re-air an interview that I did a little bit earlier in the year with the Como Brothers. Their new album, Baby Steps, just came out, so I think it's a good time. And they're going to open for David Cook on October 25th in New York City. So
nice.
I think that would help give them, you know, a little bit extra promotion. And then Monday night, I'm speaking with James C. Burns again because he has just written a movie.
Oh.
And it's called Nam Zombies.
That sounds interesting. Sounds kind of fun.
Yeah, very interesting. You know, it's in the Vietnam era, and he plays a master sergeant, and these guys are fighting against zombies. So we're going to find out more about that, and he's got a lot of other projects coming up. And that's at 7 p.m. Eastern time. And then Tuesday, I have on the show, I have to look, Hartley Sawyer. He's from The Young and the Restless and also from Glory Days. On Wednesday, during the day at 3 p.m. Eastern time on my other show, I have an interview with World 5.
Now, who are they? I've not heard of them.
World 5, actually, their lead singer is a Grammy Award winner. His name is Pat Hunt.
Okay.
I'll have to send you information because I think you'd really like them and really, you know, you'd probably even play their music on air on your show. And then Wednesday night, I have Janice Ian. Remember At 17?
No way.
The song?
Janice Ian?
I do. She's a multi-Grammy Award winner and nominated. She was nominated 9 times. She has 2 Grammys. She's an author now. Her recent Grammy that she won this year, she beat out President Bill Clinton, First Lady Hillary Obama, Rachel Maddow, Ellen DeGeneres, and I want to say there's another person I can't think, but that she won against them for her spoken word audio book.
Wow.
And it's called Society's Child. So
that's
pretty
amazing.
Yeah,
and I first
cannot wait.
I heard of her, of course, when I was a teenager and she put out her song At 17. That was the big memorable tune from my youth. And wow, that's amazing. She's legendary. You are so fortunate to get her on the show. I can't wait to hear it.
I know. It'll be Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Central. So that's what time for you guys? 3 p.m.
Yeah, so I'll just sneak a listen at work. I'll be at work.
Yeah.
I'll just slip on the headphones and pretend I'm working. Did I say that?
Yeah. Or you could listen to the podcast so you don't get in trouble.
Oh, okay, maybe I'll do that then. That's probably better.
Yeah. And Thursday, I have Michael Matteo Rossi. He's a director. He's a pretty well-known director. Very young. Award-winning, has written a lot of great movies, and he's just written another one called Misogynist, which is based on a true story. And in his cast is Jonathan Bennett, who us soap fans know as the old JR from All My Children, and Tracy Bregman from The Young and the Restless. And I also have a friend of mine in California over there, my friend Maria. She actually produced the movie, and that's how I found out about it and hooked up. And I was like, okay. So I reached out to the director, writer, Michael, and asked him if he'd be interested, and he said definitely. So we're going to do that. And then Friday, my interview with Rob Bonfiglio, which you just told me that you know through the internet.
Yes, and he's a great guy. And by the way, I'll do this here before Rob gets wind that we're talking about it. I think it's pronounced Bonfiglio, just so you know.
Well, that's what I was going to tell him. Please forgive me if I screw up your name. when you don't talk to a person, you only have to try to figure out how you say their name, you know?
Yes, yes.
So.
And so I've never actually spoken to him, but I've emailed with him a lot, and his album Bring on the Happy is such a great power pop album. I actually gave it a Twirl Award on my other show, Twirl Radio.
Really?
Got the award. Yeah, like 3 or 4 years ago, I gave it the Ear Candy Award. That's I always award one album the Ear Candy Award, where it's that one album where it's so listenable, you can just grab it, you know, and throw it on anywhere during a show in the middle of a set, play any song, and it just sounds good with anything else. It's not necessarily the album of the year, but it's the Ear Candy one, like the most versatile, fun album to listen to. And his album was just that. It's just a great listen.
Definitely. And he now has his new album out, Mea Culpa, and it's just as good, if not even better. I mean, I just absolutely love his music and have played so many of his songs on my show already, and it's been a lot of fun. So I'm really looking forward to this interview as well.
Awesome.
So that's
Please tell
my
I
week.
Said hello.
I'm booked.
You are a busy person, that's for sure.
It just came out of the blue. I mean, you know, there was so many the summertime is dry as far as for this show is concerned, because the actors in that, you know, take time off to spend with their family, and they go on, you know, vacation and stuff, like, you know, live normal lives or do other events, like they do fan events, or they have other things that they do on the side, like jewelry lines or whatever. And so they're all busy with that kind of stuff. So the summer was pretty dry. And then, boom, all of a sudden, October, I'm like, what? Wait. And then, of course, they all want the same day or the same week.
Yes.
So I've been working very, very hard over this past weekend and getting questions together to get an idea of what I'm going to ask everybody. Because normally I wait till the night before to do this. But when you have so many interviews coming up in 1 week, you just have to get a grasp on it and do it, you know, ahead of time.
Yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean. I've had a ton of interviews that I've done, and they were piling up. I met this really great publicist back east, and he's hooked me up with such interesting artists. And it was kind of like strike while the iron's hot. And he said, I know I'm throwing them at you, but you know, you can always play them back later. And that's what I did. I think within a month I recorded like 8 interviews, and that doesn't include the ones I was doing live on my show. And then I've just been editing them and just putting them on the shows as weeks progress. I'm almost done with that now. That's stuff I've done over the summer. So I know where you're coming from when you're talking about lots and lots of interviews. Which reminds me, I've got one coming up. Have you heard of a gentleman by the name of Richard X. Heyman? His middle name is X.
Does it
actually
ring a bell?
X. A lot of people haven't. I've heard of him for years, never actually heard his music, but he's kind of like the original indie power pop type of figure. He apparently produced a lot of this stuff for years. He's been around since the 60s, really, but he's done his own work for the last 25 years. So his publicist sent me the album on Friday morning, wee hours in the morning, his latest album. So I just download it to my phone, listen to it at work, love the technology, and I was so struck by this album. The album is called X, that I listened to it 3 times in a row, and I'm so excited. I'll be interviewing him sometime this week for future airplay, but I just said to him, where's this guy been all my life? You know, and there's so many artists out there that are like that.
Exactly. And some that, you know, were well-known back in the day, and then some just new ones, you know, and you just didn't hear about them yet. So let me check this call and see if we maybe have our guest.
Sounds good.
Yeah. Hi, this is Take 2 Radio, and Pam, who's calling?
Hey.
How's it going? It's Bobby and Michael from the Planetary Blues Band.
Well, hi, guys. How are you doing?
Doing good. We were a little confused how it works. I think we were on hold, I think 3 or 4 times sitting there talking to each other on the three-way call.
Oh.
We didn't know what was going on. And then finally, the fourth time I heard that we were in the queue, waiting.
Yeah, you got to press the 1, otherwise I don't know
how
to pick up that call.
We did that every single time. But
oh, you
for
did?
Some
oh,
reason,
okay. Because I would see a call come in and then drop off. So that must have been you guys.
Yeah, because the smartphone thing is weird, because you got to merge the calls and you got to have your keypad up,
Yeah.
So you've had some excitement for the day then.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I want to introduce you to my special co-host today. It's Mike Lidskin. Say hi, Mike.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, Mike.
Nice to meet you.
We got 2 mics here, Mike and Mike in the afternoon.
Yeah.
We'll work this out. One of the mics is really a talented musician, and the other one is me, so I think we'll be able to sort that out.
Someone's got to be Michael. Someone's got to be Mike, then.
Then you'll be the Planetary Blues guy. You're Michael. We'll do it that way.
That's good. That's what all everybody calls me anyhow.
Oh, is it? Okay. Okay, good. Now, when I posted on your Facebook wall, Martin says today's his day off of talking and that it was all up to you, Michael.
So what's up with that? That translates into he's watching football. I'm watching football right now. I got the Bears game on. But he is, there's no way, because the thing is, I mean, I don't do the fantasy football stuff. Martin does. We're crazy Bears fans. At least Martin and I are. Michael could care less. But, I got the game on in the background, and Martin has, he's probably at home screaming at the TV.
So now, Martin, when you listen back to this, you're busted. They told
I think he'll have no problem admitting what's going on here.
Well, I guess you got to pick your priorities on certain days.
Funny.
So, anyways, what I'd like to do is have you guys give a little background on yourself and tell us a little bit about how you got into music. I know that there's a theme going on here. It looks like 3 of you are brothers.
Yeah, well, we all, got into music at a really young age. But I guess I'll let Michael start this one because he started playing, that's a couple of years before I even started playing. So, Mike?
Well, let's see here. So, Martin is actually the first of us 3 brothers to start playing. He started playing guitar I think he had noodled with some acoustic guitar when he was probably like 13 or something, but he didn't stick with it too long. But then he revisited it near like 16, and he got an electric guitar. And I always will remember the day he got that electric guitar because he just got like a Squire with a little amp. And I was always really, really intrigued by it. And him and his friend Caleb always played. But so they kept playing for the next, year and a half or so, or 2 years. And then eventually, I would noodle on his guitar, and because he lived in the basement at our mom's house, and I would go down in the basement and always play around on his guitar. So it became really clear to me soon that I wanted to follow in his footsteps. Of course, I looked up to him a lot, and play guitar as well. So I got my first guitar when I was 14, and at that point, Bobby was about 16, and Martin was about 18, because we're all 2 years apart, roughly. And so I got my guitar, and then about a year and a half later, Bobby started playing bass. But when I got my guitar, I started jamming with a couple friends of mine. One of them lived down the street and played guitar. His name was Steve. And then another one was actually Bobby's good friend growing up with, who's Bobby's age, 2 years older than me, who was a drummer, and his name was Joe. And he actually was Planetary's main drummer for we've been a band a little over a decade, and for the first half of our career, he was our main drummer. Now the drummer that we have now is also another good friend of ours who's actually Martin's age group. So that's 2 years above Bobby. And he's our current drummer. But so long story short, I was jamming with Joe and Steve, my friends, and Martin had been jamming a little bit with Nick, who is in his age group, who is our present drummer. And, mm-hmm. you know, at some point, Martin noticed that what me and Steve and Joe were doing didn't sound bad at all, because we always wanted him to jam with us, you know, but he's the older brother, so it's not always easy to get him to check out what you're doing at that age, you know. But anyway,
he's cool, and you're just kids. You're just the kids.
Yeah,
pretty much. That's what was going on.
So basically, he heard us, and he was pretty impressed. So we got him to jam with us. And then, you know, so me, Martin, and our friend Joe, and our friend Steve were jamming all the time. And eventually, we're like, we need somebody to play bass, you know. So it was a little weird because we had three guitars, three Stratocasters at that. And eventually we got Bobby to play bass. And Bobby, you know what, it's funny because I think Bobby could tell you about this, but he noodled around with bass prior to this too, but didn't, you know, he was revisiting it at this point when we started Planetary. So what's the deal with that, Bobby? Didn't you?
That was like when I was in the sixth grade. I had, you know, was really into Jack Bruce, and a friend of mine had a Fender bass, one of our brothers, actually, friends, you know, and I, at that point, I think I had rented like a bass or something from the local music store that Michael teaches, and he instructs up at Front Porch Music here in town, and I'd rented a bass for a little while. I think I took a couple lessons, but I wasn't, you know, I was just too young into other things at that point. I'm 12 years old, so, you know, a few years later, when all these guys were playing, it just kind of just was a natural thing that, well, needed a bass. So I think I got a bass one, you know, one Christmas or something, and then it was literally like that. Then a week later, we were rehearsing, practicing songs, and having to learn stuff at a really fast pace. At least, I mean, we were playing a lot of stuff, you know, pretty much right away, it seems. I don't remember. Mm-hmm. It's weird. I don't really remember a time I'm not, like, actually playing songs. Like, right from the beginning, we were playing old Chicago blues tunes, just learning stuff off of Buddy Guy and Junior Wells, Hoodoo Man Blues, and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So when did you guys actually pick the name Planetary, and where does that name come from?
That was, like, a few years into the process. We were... You know, it got to a point where we had been playing enough. At first, it was just, you know, we would all, you know, hang out at our mom's house in the basement. All of our friends, everybody would come over here after school or whatever. You know, people would be in our basement just listening to us jam. You know, and it got to a point where, you know, we had kind of built up enough of an audience with just our, you know, some of our friends that we needed a band name. You know, so I don't know exactly how it came about. I remember that one night that it happened. I remember where I was at. I was in my mom's kitchen with our old drummer at the time, and I think I kind of came up with the name based on old Maha Vishnu Orchestra, which is a jazz fusion band from the 70s, but they had a song called Planetary Citizens on one of their CDs, you know, and I think the lyrics to it are like, you know, something like, we're planetary citizens of the human race trying to make the world a better place. Blah, 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 you know. So for us, you know, as a band, we've always had, you know, certain ideals, I guess. One of our good friends biggest band supporters, this guy John Brown, he's a great friend of ours, but he like actually has labeled us as blues hippies, you know. So I mean, that's really what we are. So I mean, the whole thing with the name Planetary Blues, I think I suggested that we'd call ourselves like Planetary Citizens or something, and then our drummer at the time, you know, I think it had the idea of, you know, calling ourselves Planetary Blues, which was way cooler. I mean, it was kind of nerdy when I look back and think about it, you know.
I'm glad that he
changed it up, but it's been one of these things that we've debated it forever, me and our old drummer, you know. He claims to have just came up with the name outright, but he's full of it.
it's a very, very cool name. And, you know, on the website, it states that you guys are a rock band, yet you have the name Blues in the name of your band. So how do you reconcile that difference? How do they work together, the two genres?
Well, for me and for all of us, I mean, like, really, you know, one thing our brother's been saying, Martin, off stage, on stage lately, something that, you know, we heard Buddy Guy say, and that, you know, what the, you know, really all rock and roll is the blues sped up, you know, and that's really all we've ever done is just play old blues and rock and roll. A lot of people don't realize it, but I mean, really, any great rock band, what they've done is play blues. I mean, I thought about it one day, and you could take the Rolling Stones, Led Zeppelin, the Beatles, Jimi Hendrix, it doesn't even matter. You can just keep listing these bands. And the one thing that almost every single one of them has in common is that they all, in their early stages, were playing Chess Records, Chicago Blues.
Yes.
And a lot of people don't realize that, just, you know, blues, because it's, you know, it, I don't know. It's a sad thing. For us, they're like, we got to do what we do. And that, you know, we have to call ourselves a rock band, and we have to play this blues to educate people, you know, really.
It's a good point. Well, you mentioned
where it's all coming from.
You mentioned some of the great British bands of the 60s and 70s, and Led Zeppelin's first album was pretty much straight-up blues, just really loud and really fuzzy.
Yeah, totally. Michael loves Jimmy Page. He just got done reading Jimmy Page's autobiography, actually, right, Mike?
Well, no, I mean, it's a book called Light and Shade, which is basically just a bunch of – it's him being interviewed throughout the whole thing. But, yeah, it's a super insightful book. It's really cool. And I can relate to Jimmy Page, too, just as a lead guitarist slash I've been working on engineering music. I actually engineered the whole album Once Upon a Time in the South Loop. But, yeah, I mean, it's you know, everything that we're talking about right now is just so important, too, because American music is the problem. You know, if somebody asked me, what does America have about its culture to be, what do we have to be most proud about? You know, I would say by hands down, the easiest answer is American music. And the irony of the British invasion is that the British invasion wasn't necessarily just, it was a British take on American music, you know?
Yeah, it was really the British invading us with our own music, you know? I
mean,
the old Beatles, like BBC sessions, if you take that, when I was a kid, you know, when I first started buying CDs, you know, some of the first CDs I was buying were just Beatles, you know, Beatles discs. Because our dad, you know, growing up, really loved the Beatles and Chuck Berry and the Rolling Stones. So, but anyway, I had bought these, you know, double disc Beatles live at the BBC and all that stuff. You know, all those recordings. They're playing like Matchbox Blues and covering all the old, you know, Chuck Berry stuff. Which Chuck Berry, you know, he was on Chess Records label, same label as Buddy Guy and Bo Diddley and everybody else. You know, that all the British cats were listening to, you know? So, I mean, everybody was covering this stuff and playing it, you know? And you're not really, I guess some of the point that I'm saying is you're not going to find a rock band that doesn't play blues. And a lot of bands, you know, even back in the 60s, called themselves blues bands, like Santana, when he first started out, was the Santana Blues Band. But, you know, for marketing purposes or whatever, dropped blues. But I think we're living in an age where, you know, I think, you know, for a little while, we actually dropped blues band from our name. We just called ourselves Planetary, you know, for a little bit, Planetary or Planetary Blues. But you know, with our latest recording, we decided, no, we're going to incorporate with the name the Planetary Blues Band, you know, because even though it's going to maybe kind of confuse a couple people or whatever, but I think, you know, for our purpose, we need it, the blues in the name in this day and age, you know.
Back to your
roots.
Definitely.
Well, you know what else, too, is if you ask a lot of people that, you know, enjoy music and listening to music and listen to a certain genre of music, especially like rock, and if you ask them, do you listen to blues music, they'll say no, you know, a lot of times, but they don't realize
that it's
actually in that rock music.
Well, yeah,
totally. People are listening to it all the time, and they don't realize it, you know, per se.
American music has such a strong influence globally. It's I don't think it's too extreme to say that blues might it's potentially the most influential music on the globe, you know.
Yeah.
And it's in the genetic structure of music all around the world in so many ways that people are unaware of, you know. I mean, people in Europe, people in the East they love American music. Like, when you go to the international establishments in Chicago, like Buddy Guy's Legends or Kingston Mines, those are places that have a lot of people coming from South America, like I said, from the East and from Europe. And it's amazing to see how many people, you know, it's actually sad, too, to a certain extent, because you start to get the feeling that people overseas appreciate...
more than we do, yeah.
More than we do, at least as far as the youth goes, you know. So it's definitely one of our main goals to try to open the doors. We're hoping that when we play music that we could be a door opener to people being inquisitive and being like, well, geez, where does a sound like this come from, you know? Because, you know, you don't see that. I mean, you have a lot of great bands, though, like Jack White and the Black Keys, you know. I'm really happy to see guys like them become as popular as they have, because that's been a great door opener in itself.
Yeah, and they're paying homage to the days of old, you know, really.
Now, when you guys have played live, have you had certain audiences that were strictly rock audiences and then other times certain audiences that were more blues audiences? And is there a difference?
Really, well, you know, when we first started, all we were doing was playing blues, and like when, you know, before we were even, you know, had an official band name or were playing gigs, we were just kids jamming in the basement. And all of our friends at the time, you know, we had a lot of people coming over our house. And we weren't going to lie, our place was kind of the party place. Everybody, you know, people knew that they could come over here and we could hang out and have a good time. We were jamming, everybody's watching us, and, you know, our mom was, you know, a very good attorney who was out working a lot, you know. So after school, we always knew that we had at least a little time right away for everybody to come here and hang out while we jammed. And so we kind of had, you know, from the very beginning, our audience was young kids who were listening to what we were doing, and to them it was like an alternative music, you know, because we were playing stuff that most of our peers, you know, had never even heard of, you know. But to them, it was just like, wow, these guys are jamming, you know. They didn't look at it as like, well, they're just playing blues, you know. They just came over and were listening to us jam, you know.
Yeah, and I've noticed lately with a lot of the bands, the indie bands that I've been interviewing, actually have been putting it out there that they're not just a rock band, that they're saying they're a rock band with blues influence. So that's a good thing that it's coming back around, you know, and people are speaking more about it. So that way, as you guys are, you're educating, you know, a newer generation.
Yeah, and from the get-go, like, I mean, that's what we did, like, the whole educational thing, we were doing right away. You know, back in the day, when we first started playing, we were fortunate enough to play and do a show with a guy named Sun Seals, and he was, like, a legendary Arkansas blues player. And it was really crazy because we were really into Sun Seals, you know, as young kids. Aside from Junior Wells and Buddy Guy, he was the one we were listening to a lot of his stuff and loving his songs. And a weird thing kind of...
Don't forget to include that, you know, one of the first summers of practicing, you know, not long after Bobby started playing his bass and Planetary was formed, we covered two albums in their entirety almost, and one of them was Sun Seals Live and Burning, and the other one was Junior Wells Hoodoo Man Blues.
Yeah, but I guess, totally. And the whole thing, what I'm saying, though, about the Sun Seals, though, is, like, that recording in particular. Like, you know, there's one song on there that we would play, this song called Funky Bitch, which was a Sun Seals tune, and it's an awesome song, but we kind of, that was one of the first songs we started playing, and we were playing it, like, all the time, and all of a sudden, our friends, we had certain friends, you know, some of our hippie friends were starting to you know, really tell us how much they loved that Fish song that we played, and we realized that, wait, they're talking about Funky Bitch. And then, you know, we weren't listening to a lot of Fish, but a lot of our friends were, and you know, it turned out that we ended up educating our friends that no, this is actually a Sun Seals song, and Trey Anastasio is, you know, hugely influenced by Sun Seals, you know. And every time, like, you know, Fish would go play Soldier Field, they would have Sun Seals come up and play with them. So, but it just happened to, you know, be weird because we didn't know of the song because of Fish. We knew of it because of Sun Seals. So at the very beginning, we were educating people about Sun Seals. But the weird thing with it, like, that I was trying to say, I'm sorry for being long-winded here, but we did a show with Sun Seals, and how it came about was just really crazy, one of these cosmic coincidences. I mean, we were listening to and playing a lot of Sun Seals, and then it turned out that our dad's best friend was a guy named Mike Boyle, who lived across the street from him, who was a bass player. And it turned out that he was, at the time, was Sun Seal's working bass player. And he kind of put, I think, the pieces of the puzzle together, I think, you know, with our older brother somehow. Mike, you know, Boyle had told our dad that, wait a minute, these guys are, you know, like he knew that we were listening to, you know, to Sun Seal's, who he was playing with. And so then we ended up, you know, going out to, Mike Boyle had a jam night out at this in Lansing, a bar in Lansing, Illinois, called Bottoms Up there, that we would hit every Sunday. And we did that for a while. And then sometime later, we ended up doing a show with Sun Seal's where we put it together, me and Mike Boyle, set up with Sun here a couple months before he passed away. We sold over 600 tickets. It was awesome. But we made, like, newsletters that flooded the high schools with, and really let people know. Like, our newsletter was written by Martin. It was a really nice letter, you know. It really was. It was, we called it a blues news or whatever, blues news or something. And we sent it out, like, hundreds and hundreds of them, passed them out throughout the high school. So the amount of young kids that we got to go out there, you know, checking out some fields, I mean, it really ended up being epic for us. I mean, we got a huge press, and that was in our early days. That was, like, the biggest, you know, thing that we had done at that time. It was huge, you know, for
playing
us.
With one of your idols too. Wow.
Yeah, and the thing that's crazy is because he was in really ill health, and we were just really fortunate enough that you know, our dad's best friend was, you know, really good friends with him. It was just this weirdest coincidence, you know. So.
Well, that's awesome. Not a lot of people get to play for their idols like that, you know. So that's something that you'll always have with you as one of your probably greatest memories.
Well, and yeah, it absolutely is. And those are the type of memories that make you and things that happen in life that make you realize that you can't take life for granted and that things happen for a reason. You know, because then
right.
Just even with us, we've had so many weird things happen. I mean, we've always been these biggest Buddy Guy fans, and if we went into all the weird Buddy Guy coincidences, that's unreal in itself. But I mean, I could let Michael speak on that a little bit, because I mean, it's definitely something I think that we need to talk about, is that the relationship with the club up there and how we started playing up at Buddy Guy's, because you know, we were really fortunate enough to have him actually hop up on stage with us back on Michael's birthday back in May.
Wow. What a nice gift. That was at Legends, right? Buddy Guy's Blues Legends?
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, Michael, come on. I need to breathe anyway, so.
Well, it's a crazy story, actually. It's actually an interesting story from the beginning. Let's see here. Almost 3 years ago, more like two, closer to 2 years ago, two and a half. I don't know. I can't think at this point of what month it was. It was maybe actually no. It must have been.
I think we started going in the fall, Mike. It was early, it was the fall around this time of year almost.
It was September 2010. So me and Bobby and our drummer Nick went to the jam night at Legends, and basically it's a really popular jam night, and you know, traditionally a jam night works like you go there, you sign up on a list when you get there. And if you know, it's first come, first serve usually, you know. But at a place like Legends, there's so many people that they tend to not go in the order of the list as much as they just call people they know, especially because they have a reputation to hold. And sometimes there's train wrecks when you just call up strangers who say they can play, you know. But anyhow, so when we got there, it was standing room only. It's a Monday night, and I'm sitting here thinking, geez, are we going to be able to get into this jam night and jam? And so I'm scanning the room of the club, and I see the sound booth, and I'm like, oh, perfect person to talk to. I got to figure out what's going on. And so I went up to the sound booth and talked to the guy there, and he was super nice, you know. He's like, just talk to the host band at the set break, you know. He's like, I'm sure if you go up there and you talk to him, he'll make a point of getting you guys on the list. And so I took his advice, and I did that, and I also gave him a CD of some original material I had. I didn't have any of Planetary stuff, but I had my own stuff. So I gave him some of my solo stuff. And so basically I talked to the host band, and he was super nice, and they got us up to jam, and it was really fun. So we went there for weeks after that, for the next few Mondays. And about, like, you know, 4 or 5 Mondays later, basically for the last month, the sound guy really liked my CD and started introducing us to everybody, and his name's Greg. And so one day I'm at the bar looking at all these photos, and I see this photo of Buddy jamming with with the sound guy. And then I look at the caption on the photo, and it says Buddy jamming with his son Greg. And then all of a sudden I
feel my face
goes blush, and I'm like, oh, no. And then I look at the I look back at the sound booth, look at the photo, look back at the sound booth, look at the photo, and then it dawns on me that the person who befriended us, who was introducing us to everybody at the club for the last month, was none other than Buddy's oldest son, Greg.
But really, no, Michael, I mean, I got to interject here. But, I mean, not only introducing us, but, I mean, he was just going way, you know, beyond, above and beyond. I mean, it was ridiculous. I mean, he was really charismatically, he was funny about it, too. I mean, we were just so excited that the sound guy liked us. And, like, I remember one night we're just there, and he's you know, the guy that's hosting the jam, Brother John, he's a really multi-instrumental musician that hosts, he's been doing it for like 10 years. Brother John up there, he does every other Monday. He's the host up there. And at the time, you know, we were, you know, busting his chops, you know, about getting us up on stage all the time. But, you know, him as the host, you know, there's so many people that come up there and want to jam, you know. But we were driving up there, you know, sometimes in the snow and like an hour and blah, 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 and just really trying to get up on stage. And Greg just totally helped us out. I remember the one night in particular, he's yelling up at the stage, you know, up to Brother John, you know, just yelling our last name, you know, or just yelling, Schaefer, Schaefer, you know. Like, it was just really pretty funny.
Sounds like a great guy.
Yeah, he is. No, he really, the thing, that's what's cool about this, the whole point is that we had no idea that he was Buddy's son. I mean, we should have known just being the Buddy Guy fans who are just looking at his face, because now, you know, he looks just like him. But, I mean, we didn't have any idea, you know. But that's what made it that much more genuine and cool, the whole relationship and everything, you know. We just became really good friends right in the beginning. So, but anyway, Michael, back to what you were.
So, basically, I went to, you know, back to the sound booth after I realized who he was, and I was like, hey, man, I was like, I just want to say I'm honored and I'm really appreciative of all your kind words, because I had no clue who you were. And he's so humble, and that's why we didn't know who he was, because he's not like the type of person glamorizing the fact that he's, you know, a blues legend's son, you know. And it was just amazing, because he's just so cool about it. He's just like, oh, he's like, really, it's not a big deal, you know. And from there on out, you know, we became really good friends. And he started getting us gigs there, and so we play there about every other month now. But the best gig yet was on my birthday, which was this past May 15th, and it was awesome, because we did the whole night there, and right before we were about to finish our first set, Buddy actually, you know, some guy came up to the stage. Actually, I'm saying some guy. I'm more personal to people at Legends, and I feel disrespectful doing that. But it's this guy, James. He's a super cool guy. He came up to the stage. He's like, hey, Mike. I'm like, what? You know, he's like, Buddy's getting on stage. Get your guitars back on, you know. We'd already started to take our guitars off.
Yeah, my guitar was completely in its case. And the crazy thing about this is that I was really – I had this feeling in my heart that Buddy was going to hop up with us that night, right? Because I knew he was going to be in town, and with it being us playing there, you know, for Michael's birthday and the senior party, I just had this feeling that he was, and it was on my mind, at the forefront of my mind, the majority of the set. But then we were having so much fun, and there were so many family members that we hadn't seen in a while watching us play, that I had completely put it in the back of my mind and forgot all about even just the idea of him coming up there and then put the guitar down, and then all of a sudden what, you know, happens, you know.
What an honor, a true honor.
It was pretty, yeah, Michael, it was pretty crazy.
Michael, did you, like, faint afterwards, or how did you handle it?
Well, it was funny, because he's like, you know, he's like, Mike, and then he's like, A minor, you know, it's the guy, James, and so, you know, I told Bobby and Martin, I looked to my left, and I'm like, Bobby, Martin, A minor, you know? And then he comes back, and he's like, no, G. And so I'm like, guys. So it was funny, because we didn't even know what key. We had to change it a couple times there. But I'd seen Buddy get on stage with people before, and not to mention the fact that we listened to Buddy Guy, like, religiously, you know? So, yeah, we had a really good idea how to back.
We'd have been, basically what he's saying is we'd have been pretty much damn near ready to play anything that he would have wanted to at any
kind of
moment.
Yeah.
We ended up with some real classic old blues verses and singing some of the newer stuff he's got. But it was was awesome because, you know, when we got done playing, a lot of the employees came up to us and were like, hey, you guys did a phenomenal job. And, of course, Greg did. And he's like, they all told us the same thing, which was basically that of all the bands that, you know, they've seen Buddy jump up with, that we were, you know, one of the most attentive, and that they're sure that Buddy appreciated it, you know. And Buddy's told us a couple times there, you know, to keep it up and that, you know, we're doing, you know, a good job and stuff. So it's awesome to have had the honor to, you know, hear words like that from such a, you know, from the founder of, you know, the godfather.
The founder
right,
of the feast,
right,
as Martin calls him. Every time we're up there, Martin is, you know, giving it up for the founder of our feast, you know. But really, that's what it is. And that's what's such an honor about having him having a place like that and us being a really young band, you know, on the scene, you know, there, you know, really.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a lot of young bands. And so for us to be there, it's great, you know, and I'm glad we're all really thankful that Buddy has that place and has given us that platform, because there's not a lot of places like it.
Well, there's a lot of deja vu in our lives, like me and Bobby and Martin. We have that happen to us all the time. And to go back to your question about, you know, fainting, it was nerve-wracking, but at the same time, it was comforting, you know. Like, there's something
mm-hmm.
so familiar about Legends and about Buddy Guy and about Greg, you know, that it just seems so natural the way life has unfolded in some ways, you know. So on one hand, it was like, wow, Buddy's getting on stage. This is absolutely insane. But on the other hand, it was super, like, you know, comforting, you know. So it was a weird experience.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like at home. There was nothing nervous about it. I mean, I honestly, when you're saying fainting, no, it wasn't like that. It was almost like, you know, a long time coming kind of feeling. Like, I mean, there's no way around it. I mean, I would have fainted had it been a complete surprise. But I mean, our whole lives have been nothing, you know, but preparing for these moments and wanting to play and do what we're doing. I mean, and being on stage with Buddy Guy is something that, you know, I have visualized since I was a teenager, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I really have. It's been something I've visualized. I've thought about it, you know. I mean, you have to visualize things.
And you made it happen. If you build it, they will come. So there you go.
Well, no, you know, this is a true story, because not many people realize it, but what, like Michael Jackson, before Thriller was recorded, he put on his mirror, he actually had a note to himself that he was going to, that he was recording and working on the number one all-time selling record. He literally looked at it every single day, you know, and visualized this, and, you know, you have to meditate on these things and, you know, focus like that.
Make it so.
Yeah. And it's not just a dream. I mean, it's something that you have to visualize and you have to put into action, you know. It's not just like, you know, visualizing isn't just sitting there and, like, thinking about it, you know.
Yeah,
like, well,
that's the whole reason.
Right,
we've
definitely.
You know?
Now,
but,
I have to ask
yeah.
you guys, do you know who Johnny Lang is?
Oh, yeah, I mean, of course, because, you know, I mean, immediately right when he burst onto the scene was, you know, back when Buddy Guy, he had a duet, a little thing with, they did a song called Midnight Train on Buddy Guy's album Heavy Love. And that was, you know, when we were really, that was a few years into it for us, where we had been playing, and at that point we were, you know, we were getting tickets to see Buddy whenever we could. We weren't old enough to go jam in the club or anything like that, but we were playing a lot, you know, and watching him when we could.
Yeah, I've only just discovered him actually last month, believe it or not. He was going to play at the Arcata Theater in St. Charles, and I get the, you know, newsletter from the Arcata Theater saying who their upcoming guests are, and the owner of the theater had written on there in these huge letters, oh my God, I can't believe it, we got Johnny Lang, going on and on, and I'm like, okay, so who is this guy? And he had a video on there of Johnny, and I listened to it and found out more. And here I found out that he played with Buddy, and he's done it often, and he's this huge guy and played with all these other blues, famous blues people. And I says, oh, my God, I got to check this out. Listen to more of his music, and I'm absolutely hooked on him now, too.
Well, it's funny, like, when I first heard him, it was back when I was probably, like, 16, and he was really young at the time, Johnny Lang, when he first you know, got on the scene. And but he had
right.
a couple songs that were, you know, pretty big hits. I know he did like a Good Morning Little Schoolgirl cover, and but he had another song called Rack 'Em Up, that, you know, the pool song. And I remember actually it would come on in the pool hall that we would all hang out here.
Yeah.
When we were younger, we'd all go, and it wasn't probably the place for a bunch of 16-year-olds, but
yeah.
But I do remember that song, you know, that coming on. I think the album was called Lie to Me. I don't remember. Don't quote me on it.
Yeah, I won't.
But
well, speaking of albums, you guys released Once Upon a Time in the South Loop, and I'd like to go ahead and play a song from that, and then, you know, talk about the album and the songs that are on it. So if you can hold on for a minute.
Cool.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to play When I Say I Love You.
When I say I love you.
Blues Band, and I have to tell you what I told Mike. I think that's one heck of a sexy song, and I should be talking to you in my Mae West voice and telling you guys to come up and see me sometime.
that is a great way of putting it. I bet you I'm gonna bet that Michael's is gonna elaborate on what you just said, like in depth.
Wait, hold on. I you know what? You guys were breaking up a little bit.
Michael,
I heard a little bit of that.
She said that When I Say I Love You is a very sexy song.
I heard that, but then I
well,
didn't
that's all,
what
yeah.
you were elaborating on. Just
I said, I'm willing to bet anything that you can and are ready and willing to elaborate on what she just said.
Oh, just on the song, okay.
On what she just said about about it being sexy.
Well, that's very flattering. Let's see here. When I Say I Love You, that's like the first song I wrote. I mean, I tried writing songs a couple times.
But Mike, no, seriously though, what I'm trying to get at, what I'm looking for you to answer is like when you're talking, you know, the buddy guy thing, like in songs are just being sexy, you know, overall. But talking about nowadays, like, what you're listening to, that's where I was getting at with it. Because we've had conversations about just that, you know.
Well, you know, the thing about, I like the way Jimmy Page says it. He says that music has to have sex and it has to have attitude and it has to have, there was one other thing, I can't remember. But, you know, nevertheless, I agree with him completely. But here's the thing with modern music, it's over the top with modern music. You know, you got like hip-hop especially, you know, it's like, There's no mystique or like mystery behind it. It's all just like blunt and vulgar sometimes and just wrong, you know. Mm-hmm. Whereas like old blues music, you know, like Buddy Guy always talks about it at the club, you know, about how, you know, because he'll get on stage fairly regularly. If he's in town, he makes a point to try to get on. But when he gets up there, he always talks about how, you know, the radio today, you know, everybody's blunt and there's no, you know, whereas blues music back in the day, it took him forever to find out what B.B. King meant when in the song Sweet Little Angel, you know, where there's a, what's the word, you know, I got a sweet little angel and I love the way she spreads her wings. You know, Buddy Guy said he didn't figure out what that meant until he was in his teens, until he was like 16.
Oh.
Yeah, I mean, you go like those songs back in the day. Yeah, I mean, you had more imagination,
right.
A little more discreet, you know.
So, you know, not that there's anything like that in When I Say I Love You, but it's just the overall point that, you know, you can attract, you know, people with subtlety. You don't always have to be like, you know, vulgar about it.
No, but I mean, no, there really is, though. I mean, I think that was a good adjective used to describe the song. I mean, there is a lot of emotion in it, you know. It is sexy song, I guess.
Number one, it's genuine. And I think that if there's one thing I've learned about songwriting, when I used to try to write about, like, the first few songs I tried to write were basically just about ideas. They weren't necessarily about experiences. And I think that's why it was such a failure, you know. It was just it was a wreck. But you know, the songs that I've written that I really like are always the songs that that I can relate to. But you know, the next challenging part, When I Say I Love You is very specific, but just generally with songwriting, it's a challenge to try to write a song from an experience, but leave it vague enough to where people can relate to it how they need to, you know,
because right.
You don't always necessarily want to make it all about you. But when I say I love you, it's definitely about me. it was my first real heartbreak. So it was really easy to write that song. I just sat down and I wrote it in one sitting. I was actually watching a TV show called Californication. he's with
I'm sure enough people know about it. I mean,
yeah, enough people,
yes.
If there's people listening, I'm sure, you know, there's a lot of people, you know, that potentially have at least heard of it, if not watched it. But anyhow.
Right.
David Duchovny in the show says to the woman he's with, he's about to get on a plane or something, and like he says that he loves her to him, and she's about to go to say something back, like not necessarily that she loves him. We don't really know what she was going to say, but he puts his finger on her lip, and he's like, you know, I didn't say it to hear it. And then right there, it dawned on me, because I had just broke up with the girl that I had been in the longest relationship with at this point, which was almost, you know, it was like over 4 years. And it dawned on me exactly how I had been feeling in this experience I had with her. And I was like, yeah, that's it. When I say I love you, it's not so I can hear it back. And so I ran up in my room, grabbed a pen and a notebook, and just wrote the whole thing. And was like, you know what, this is the perfect guitar song. So I wrote it, like, there's not a lot of lyrics, and that's intentional. Well, actually, originally there was a lot. There was two more verses, but I stripped it down because I didn't like having this song that was like almost 10 minutes every time we played. And not only that, I felt like it was a little redundant, the verses that I cut out of it. But, you know, I like it having just a little bit of lyrics, because the whole thing about the song for me is it's the guitar expression.
That's what I was just about to say, Michael. It's one of those songs that it's one of those just, straight ahead, just like it's tunes that just let's give the space to tear it up. I mean, the long, slow blues that we would play, you know, it was right when Michael first started singing, you know, and then he wrote that song, and we would play it all the time. And what it did too at that point was it gave Martin time at the time when we're doing all these gigs that were 3 hours long. I mean, you know, it can get pretty crazy when you're singing all those songs, you know, and having to come up with all that material. So when Michael started singing that, like, you know, it was one of the first songs, and it was a 10-minute jam where Michael, I really enjoyed it when we first started playing. And now,
if you see it live, you'll hear the, you know, the verses the way they are on the studio recording, but it still ends up being like a 10-plus-minute jam sometimes, because I can extend it with the guitar. But that's what I love about it, you know.
What I love about it, though, is just being like, you know, the fact that we're all brothers, and, you know, our experiences have been so shared. Like, I've shared in your just various emotions and different things, you know, throughout the years. And so, like, yeah, just the whole, that song in itself, I mean, means a lot to me, and always playing, you know, there's a lot of memories that come up with it, you know?
Sometimes, you know, exactly. You being my brother, I don't consider that, you know, that you relate to it, too.
No, yeah, I know, well, that's what I'm doing. Like, actually, just being on the phone right now is making me think about it, so. Guys, I'm sorry, but I gotta say that I'm right now watching a Bears game where the Bears are down 23-7. It's disgusting right now. They're in Soldier Field, down to the Saints, but Brandon Marshall just, Alshon. Man, I'm blind. Alshon Jeffries.
Martin should be on this interview anyway, you know.
I was just going to say, you know, he could have been spending time with us, because who wants to watch the Bears lose?
No, well, the thing is he is watching it, and he's freaking out right now. He's not in a good mood. If you call him right now, it's like, I kind of detach a little bit from it. I mean, but, you know, no, the Bears are at least look like they're about to score a touchdown, so they're going to be within striking distance here. You know, hopefully in a minute's time, it's going to be a 23-14 game. So
yeah,
so
with
plenty
of
time on the clock.
Yeah.
where are you both at? I know the number we called is in New York, so.
Yeah, and I'm actually in Chicago, and Mike's in California. He's in Sacramento. Yeah.
That's wild. So, but the number's in New York.
Yep.
In Chicago and California. Wow.
It's the 21st century, guys.
Are the Sacramento Kings going to be there or not?
They're going to stay. We found a consortium. And I say we very loosely. I had nothing to do with it. But we found a consortium of people that are going to help keep it in town. They're serious about it. And
Jack has got some ownership now.
So I think it's for real now. I think once him and an entrepreneur from the Bay Area who – I think he's a billionaire in the tech industry, because the thing about Sacramento is there's not tons of corporate sponsorship here, so you need kind of out-of-town dollars. And our closest big city is San Francisco, and that's kind of where sponsorship comes from. So we're just glad to keep them. That's the only major league professional sports team we have here.
I heard they were going to be gone in Seattle and – you know, we're huge Bulls fans. We're Chicago guys, and it's just cool. Our publicist, Doug Deutsch, he's out in California, you know, and he's a huge Clippers fan and loves basketball. So we're always talking shop.
Yeah.
I can hardly get every time I get on the phone with him, we'll talk about the band for a minute, and it's just, you know, it goes right into
down to business.
What's happening?
Yes.
And I'm a huge Blackhawks fan. I watch hockey. That's about the only sport I watch.
Oh, I have tried. I've tried a little bit. You know, I haven't not a lot to get into it. But I don't want to be just one of those bandwagon guys that's like, well, the Hawks are doing good, so now I'm a hockey fan, because I've never been a hockey fan. I've never really watched hockey, and I tried, but I never can get into it. And I have so many friends that love it.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I don't even know what it is that caught me. Well, I kind of do.
Fever. They're good right now. I mean, they're kicking butt and taking names.
Yeah.
What am I allowed to say on that?
I had an old boyfriend when I was 18 that was into hockey and got me into it, and it's just grown from there. And I guess if he was a huge football fan, maybe I would be a football fan right now, but it's hockey, so...
Yeah. Well, I've just always been basketball, football.
Yeah. Tell us more about Once Upon a Time in the South Loop. I mean, how did you figure out which songs you wanted to be on there and that? Because I know you have a combination of originals and covers.
Okay, so basically six of the songs are written by Martin, and one of the songs is written by me, and there's 10 songs total, so the other three are covers. Martin chose all the material... And, you know, it's too bad that he's not here to tell you more about it. But, the three covers he chose are really, really tasteful covers. And I'm not really sure, you know, what, you know, I know this much, that the idea was to try to showcase, you know, as versatile, you know, selection as we can of what we're capable of, you know. And just to try to represent blues well, too, to get the more country blues and the more Chicago blues both mixed in. And so basically that was the concern of choosing the material, is it's just to, you know, show a broad, you know, array of what we're doing. And so Martin had, you know, I'm not really sure how old the songs, the batch of songs were. I think most of them he wrote relatively recently, and
definitely. I do can say that I think a lot of them were, you know, very recent. I mean, it all happened so quick; it's crazy. It really is.
And then what basically happened was is we I have a studio here at my house, and Martin came over and with the drummer Nick. And they recorded what's called skeleton tracks, which is just basically the guitar and the drums. So, because I engineer all the music here out of the living room, basically. And so it starts off with just real bare, just the guitar and the drums. And then after we get those tracks solidified, we went – actually, this all happened in the same day, basically. Bobby was hanging out. Nick had to take off, so he didn't spend the whole day and evening with us. But Martin, Bobby, and I basically, you know, I don't even remember what time we started. We probably started.
It was early in the day one day. Michael, was it a Friday?
Yeah, I think we started probably like noon or something and ended up going till 5 in the morning Saturday.
I think it was 7 in the morning, probably.
Well, that's when you left. But I think we left the computer desk at about, you know, like 5 in the morning or something.
Yeah, the bulk of what we recorded was all done in a one-day span, where Nick recorded the drum tracks in the daytime with Michael and Martin, and then the nighttime was spent recording bass and vocals. And it was just a really cool experience because it was just really intimate. It was just the four of us. And a lot of times we got other people hanging around. And
it was intense for me because you and Martin had you guys had some break time. Like while you were doing bass lines, Martin could chill.
Yeah, Mike. Yeah, you were nonstop that night.
I was sitting at that desk for so long, man. You know, it was intense. But it was definitely the funnest part of the recording aspect. It was just hanging out and laying it all down. And then after that was all done, you know, the cool thing about the studio being at my house is then I had plenty of time to go back and put my guitar parts on there and stuff. And so because I do all the lead guitar. Actually, well, Martin did a solo on the last track on the Shillelagh. But other than that, the rest of the solos are mine, and I had plenty of leisure to do those in. So that was the good news. But here's the whole thing. Like, we were about to get a publicist, and, you know, Doug Deutsch, who's a really awesome publicist. And
definitely,
we wanted to have the album ready by the time we hooked up with him, so that way we could start, you know, getting the press for it. So we wanted to have it done within a month's time. And the only other full album I had recorded was one in 2010, which was a solo album of my stuff. So I had some experience doing it, but the whole thing was is I took almost a year to record my solo album. So I had plenty of time to give the album a break and come back to it with fresh ears and judge it better. But with this, since we did it in such a short time frame, when I mixed all the instruments in, which is another hard, it's like such a challenging aspect, because basically if you listen to something in a quiet volume, as you turn it up incrementally, you want all the instruments, you know, the vocals, the drums, the bass, you want everything to come up evenly without, you know, any conflict between the instruments. You want it all to coexist to where it's all nice and audible. But basically, it's really hard to achieve that, you know, because sometimes you'll think you'll be listening to it at half volume and you're like, wow, this sounds really good, you know. But then you turn it up more or you turn it down some, and all of a sudden some instruments muddy up, and you're like, well, I can't hear them that well anymore. So trying to get it to sound right at each increment is so hard, especially when, you know, like I was saying, we only had about a month, so I didn't really have too long a break to just let it sit and come back at it with fresh ears and hear to judge, you know, how things sounded. So given the short amount of time, I think it turned out really well. I mean, there's things that I would change about it, you know, but to the average listener, I don't think it's anything too serious. You know, it's mainly just my own criticisms and things that I've
And as a listener, I will tell you that you are correct. We do not notice what you guys notice. You know,
as far as these
little things that you would change, you know, as long as there's a good beat, a good sound, great lyrics, that's all we care about.
Well, I can tell you right now, like yesterday, or Friday, we did a charity, like Thanksgiving fundraiser thing, and we were playing some. I got a text message from Martin telling me that, you know, a couple songs. Normally, generally, we don't have, you know, really set lists. We're not the type of band. We have a lot of stuff that we choose from, and depending on what's going on in there, it really changes things for us. I mean, we'll adapt, and particularly Martin, to whatever's going on in the room at that given moment. So our set lists are always varying. But I got a text from him telling me that we were going to do some old stuff that you know we had recorded a few years ago, which basically made me had to go and put the disc in and plug my bass in and more or less just remember my parts. And but listening to the audio and what we had done, because I was listening to an album we recorded called The Myth of Progress. And if you look it up, it's on iTunes and all that stuff under the name Planetary, not Planetary Blues Band or anything, just Planetary. But the thing I, you know, come away from it just listening to it is just, wow, you know, Michael's doing an awesome job with, you know, with the whole engineering. I'm just glad that we're at a point where we can record ourselves. We don't have to pay, you know, hourly studio time to do what we want to do. I mean, we've put enough into it where we have all this equipment and stuff, and Michael, he's really gotten good at it. My bass on the with the progress. I can't even hardly, it, you know, to me, it's like hardly audible. And I was the one that had the recording equipment at that time, but I didn't really spend a lot of time with it. I was doing a lot of other things, you know. I mean, Michael's really gotten, I guess I'll say, intimate with the, you know, with the software. I mean, he knows what he's doing. He's spent a lot of time on it, and you know, the mixes that he's put together. I mean, you know, he's highly critical, you know, of the fact that you know, we did this album in such a short time. But I'm blown away by it, and I'm thankful that he did it, because I, you know, for the first time, I feel like even just my bass is really audible in the recordings. You know, I'm completely satisfied with what we came up with here.
And that's always the mark of good engineering, is if you can hear the bass lines. I've always noticed that too.
Yeah, I mean, it really punches through. Everything is very audible on the album. You can hear, I feel like I can hear every nuance, you know.
It's really easy to have, like, murky bass sounds to where they're, like, muddy, you know. But it's, I don't know. There's still so many things about it that I don't want to advertise what I don't like about it.
Well, Michael, guys, this is, everybody here, this is why we have, you know, save it for the remastered edition, you know, 10 years from
yeah,
now.
Right.
You know? But, I mean, that's really how I feel. Like, the one album that I mentioned that called The Myth of Progress that we did, it's actually a really cool CD, and I think, honestly, if Michael took all of the files from it, because we have all the individual tracks, the, you know, the drum tracks and everything, that he could remix that stuff, and I think it would be awesome to do at some point, have him remix all of our old stuff and have it mastered.
At that point, it's like, where does it end? Then it's just going to turn into, well, wait a minute, we could just re-record this part. We could re-record this part, you know, and then it would just be kind of crazy.
Well, I'm going to jump in here and say that my co-host, Mike, has a previous appointment. He's going apple picking, so he's going to have to go.
Oh, you know what? We were sitting there. Funny to say, really quickly, though, we were sitting there, yeah, me and Michael, on hold, and we couldn't figure out what was up with this whole system. We didn't know if we were on hold. We didn't know if we had to wait. That's why you said you got multiple notifications that we were on call, because we kept calling in. You know, we would hang up and we would talk to each other and be like, what's going on? Are we on hold? Do they know that we're on hold? But in that time, I was hearing you talking about apples. And funny thing is our stage guy and our Michael's best friend, Guillermo, he works for an organic farmer out here this time of year. And so he is constantly, you know, dealing with the good organic, fresh local produce. So anyway, that's all I had to say about that.
That's ironic. And you're probably listening to us thinking, is this the apple picking show or some kind of music show?
Yeah, I wanted to like chime in, but I didn't, you know, I literally sat there for about, you know, 10 minutes, you know, not saying anything, because I didn't know if you guys could hear me or not. Like, I had my phone on the microphone. So, but anyway, it's been a pleasure.
Nice talking with you guys. I love your music. I hope to chat with you guys again sometime.
Definitely. I'm just glad that I better time spent talking to the both of you and, you know, giving us the time to tell our story while then sitting here watching the Bears get their butts kicked by the Saints and in Soldier Field right now, 23-10. So hopefully that
always
changes in the next 16 minutes of this game.
Yes, music's always a winner.
Okay.
Thanks, Mike, for joining me. I'll talk with you soon, okay?
All right, take care, Pam. Talk to you soon.
All right, have fun. Now, for our listeners, be sure to check out the Planetary Blues website, and it's planetaryblues.com. Also, be sure to like their Facebook page, facebook.com/theplanetarybluesband, and follow them on Twitter at Planetary Blues. Now, do you guys use social media a lot? I mean, I see that you use Facebook, but how's your Twitter?
None of us are really up on that. I mean, we do have an account. You know, I'm the one that set up all that stuff. We all have various roles and things that we do in the band. But between, like, me and Doug, our publicist, you know, we do a lot of the online stuff. I mean, we're all online, you know, at various moments, but more or less, Doug and I maintain that. I mean, we do all that stuff on our own. We try to do everything that we can to, you know, point people in our direction, you know. Yeah, I mean, it's hard in this day and age, but I noticed cool stuff. Like the other day, I noticed that we had a good amount of sales on our Xbox Live. Like, oh, so people are playing video games and downloading our album. So, you know,
oh, that's pretty
that's
cool.
The cool
I didn't know
thing
that
about
you could do that.
The day and age, you can you know, point people in that direction. I mean, you know, there's so many different outlets right now. You can get our stuff on Amazon or iTunes or
right.
you know, the video games or Google. You can listen to it. I mean,
I had no idea that you could listen to music on video games like that on systems because, of course, I don't
I'll
play it. But
well, see, I do. I love sports games. And the one thing I can honestly say is that prior to – you know, before you could, you know, with the Xbox and Microsoft and their stuff, prior to them, you were always subjected to whatever artist is on the video game. So it would suck. I would be playing, like, John Madden football or a video game, and you'd be listening to some of the worst music you could possibly imagine. And you get these songs stuck in your head, you know, and you want to listen to the games, you know, music because you have the commentators. The games are getting really real now, you know. So,
right.
You know, but that's one of the cool things about this now. So people can actually take our music and make it the stadium music. So, you know, people
cool.
could be playing their season. They could be like, well, we're the Chicago Bears. We're starting I'm starting a franchise and, you know, I'm going to make my Bears team and I'm going to play this 16-game season. But in the stadium, in Soldier Field, on the actual stadium music, they will be playing the Planetary Blues. So,
that's awesome.
It's really good.
I love that.
In one way or the technology has gotten really cool.
Definitely. So. Definitely. That's I'm going to have to ask my kids because they're the ones that play the games.
Oh,
and
I
my
do.
Husband,
I still play
sports.
The games just because of the sports ones. Yeah, I mean, yeah, you definitely have to talk to your kids about it because it is that is really a really cool part of the new gaming experience, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, me and our drummer who's not with us right now on the phone, but me and him, you know, we play a video game, an NBA video game all the time, and he's got his music programmed into it, so it's really cool. You know, we can go back, like the other night we made an all-time Chicago Bulls team, and we played against an all-time Lakers team. He was the Lakers, I was the Bulls, and we played a 7-game series, but the whole time it had the music that he had, you know, selected, pre-picked, playing throughout the stadium. So it was awesome.
Well, that might make me even want to play games because then I can listen to music that I love and play the game. Who knows?
I think it's just Xbox music, at least as far as the Xbox goes. I don't know about other systems. I mean, me, I'm just stepping up on this myself. It's hard to stay up on all this stuff.
Right. I actually have an interview tomorrow night with James C. Burns, and I don't know if you've ever played Call of Duty Black Ops 1 or 2, but he's Sergeant Frank Woods from that, and he's actually got another video game that he'll be on, too. And we'll find out
That's
more
wild.
About that
we, no, we have a good friend of ours and the guy that did our artwork for our album. He's a big gamer and plays all that stuff. I'm sure he does a Call of Duty. Michael, do you happen to know what games it is that he does videos for? Because you can see these on YouTube. Our buddy Jay, he's got videos that are like have been viewed. He's pretty much gone viral. He's got over I think a million hits.
Wow.
You know, with his videos. But he does video game songs, and me and Michael actually recorded on one of them, but I do not remember what it was.
I think that was Halo.
Halo or Modern Warfare or something.
No, it wasn't Modern Warfare. I'm pretty sure it was Halo. But yeah, he does both those games and I think he's done a Call of Duty too. I think he's done all of them.
Yeah, probably.
Really? Wow.
Yeah,
that would
he's
be awesome.
Jay Weinberg though. He's cool. He's done our artwork and we've collaborated, you know. But he's a big gamer. So.
Well, tell him to call James tomorrow and talk with him. That would be neat to have him do that, but. I'm going to close the show with two other songs of yours, and if you want to touch a little bit about each one of them, I'm going to play See That Grave Is Kept Clean, and I have to play that just for the name of that song. What's the story behind that?
Honestly, that's one where, like, if I hadn't made the three-way call here, I would call Martin, you know, right now. It's almost worth it almost to try to – we could almost play the song right now and try to call Martin. Maybe we could get Martin online. It's the fourth quarter of this Bears game. He might answer the phone. I don't know. In all seriousness, I don't think that he has any idea that that's even a possibility. I mean, that's something that we could try. We could play the song
go
on
ahead.
Air, and in the meantime, in the next 3 minutes, we could try to have Michael bring Martin in on this three-way call, because I could, you know, Mike, you want to try doing that?
I don't know. It's up to you guys. Should I do it?
Yeah.
Sure, go ahead.
I'm all for it. Why not?
All right, then just give me a second. I'm gonna add his call right now.
Yeah, because that'll
okay.
give you a few minutes. He'll answer, I have a feeling. So that'll give us a few minutes to let him know what's up. So we'll play the song.
Yeah,
I'll
the other
phone...
song that the other song I'm going to play is That's No Way to Get Along. Those are the last
yeah.
two.
Well, hopefully we'll get Marty on the line here in a minute here. So, but, yeah, commence with whatever one you would whatever one you'd like.
Well, since we're waiting for him for See That Grave Is Kept Clean, I'll go ahead and play the other one then.
Well, hold on,
so,
wait, hold on, Mike. What are you saying, Mike?
Should I try Martin Sell?
Yeah. I would say it's worth it to try both of them. Well, I mean, we're going to be on mute, so it doesn't matter. This is really funny. This technology is crazy to me these
yeah,
days.
Yeah, I know.
Anyway, so why don't we you go ahead and play the song, and we'll take care of getting a hold of Martin.
Okay. Actually, I noticed I didn't upload that other one. I uploaded Blues Resurrection, so that's the one I'm going to play right now. So hang on, okay?
Okay, great. That one's been getting actually great reviews.
Something supernatural going down. I I got Robert Johnson too under my bed. Yeah, the blues is freaking me out. Also got Petey Wheatstraw's shoes under my bed. On turning, oh, and the hair is rising on my head.
That awesome song is Blues Resurrection by the Planetary Blues Band. Now, you guys all with me? Did we get Martin?
Unfortunately, no. He's probably just ignoring my call because he's angry.
Yeah, he probably is. I was sitting here wondering, like, is he going to be on the line or not?
Yeah.
When we got back. But no, it's not looking good for the Bears right now. We got about 8 minutes to go. It's
that's why. He's not going to answer if the game is still going.
No, well, yeah, of course it's going. What do you think I've been doing? I mean, honestly, there's been nothing happening that for me to scream about. I was worried that the Bears were going to be putting some more points up here. I thought I would be yelling in the phone, you know. I was kind of worried.
So you only yell when they're doing good, right?
Well, I mean, it's harder for me to hold it in when they're doing good, you know, the yelling.
Yeah.
I mean, I've just been walking in and out, you know, of the house. I've been walking in, looking at the TV, walking out on the porch. But if they were up and moving the ball and having a good game, it would be, this whole thing would have gone different. I probably would have shut up. Michael would have been talking the whole entire time.
And see, when I watch the Hawks, I yell either way. When they're doing bad because I'm screaming at them, you idiots, or whatever. Or I'm yelling because, yeah, they scored. You know, great game.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is that they've been playing from behind the whole time, so I haven't been even looking at the screen the whole time.
Yeah.
It's been easier to walk away from them.
If you followed me on Twitter, you would see my Twitter feed would be all about the Hawks, good or bad or ugly, you know, while the game is going on.
I'll go and check that out. The Twitter thing is something that none of us have really gotten up with that. We do have a Twitter account, but we have not done much tweeting. I did notice that, you know, we have been tweeted about, but we do, you know, it's not something that. It's crazy the amount of stuff that's out there now that you got to really be on top of, you know, when you're promoting yourselves. And that's where we're at, where we've always done everything ourselves at this, you know, in this space and time where we're at, you know, with the new album and everything and getting great reviews and press and such on it. We're at a point where we need, you know, really good, you know, booking agents, you know, helping us. We're ready to tour and really seriously hit the road. We just had a great review in a Blues Matters magazine, and that's like the UK's biggest blues magazine, and we had a great review over there. So that's something that we've been thinking about, is, you know, hopping over the pond. So.
Yeah, definitely. Have you guys ever played out of the country?
No, not out of the country. I mean, you know, we've gone played a lot in the Midwest, and as far west as we've gone is out in Colorado. We've done a couple little tours out there that we've set up. But, you know, with the release of this new album, I mean, it's the first time that we've more or less had our, I guess, ducks in a row. Just even having a publicist, our buddy Doug working with us has been great because, you know, I mean, obviously he set up this interview, and, you know, he's been instrumental in helping us.
No, he's on it, believe
lately.
Me. When he takes on a band, he's on it. I've interviewed quite a few of his bands or singers, and he's very quick to acknowledge and answer any questions I have or ask for anything, you know, such as music and that. And he keeps in touch. He's very much on it, and he, you know, spreads it out all over the place. He publicizes about interviews and things. So you got a great guy there.
Oh, yeah, he's on point for sure. So, but that's where we're at right now. I mean, we're looking to really hit the road and tour. I mean, a few years back, you know, when we spent so many years just bar gigging here in the region and whatnot. But a few years back, we invested in a really nice van for us to go hit the road and tour. And we've gone out in a few times here, but it's pretty much paid off at the moment. And we're looking at 2014 just really being a year for us to get things get moving. I mean, we're all ready to ready to go. I mean, we've played a lot. We've been doing this for a long time. Played a lot of bar gigs. I mean, countless hours in these bars. We played locally just here in our own hometown every Thursday for 10 years straight, you know.
Wow.
Three and a half hour gigs. I mean, we've played a lot, covered a lot of stuff. And, I look forward to really just hitting the road and getting out there. But the recent review that we got, though, the reason why we were talking about hopping the pond and going over to the UK, the review that we just got via Doug Deutsch was Blues Matters magazine. It's a really prominent magazine overseas. It's the biggest blues magazine in England. And it was just really cool for me to see our album review, you know, next to the likes of, like, you know, Tedeschi and Trucks and Government Mule and stuff like that. I mean, it was kind of humbling, you know.
Right.
But,
right. But it's definitely an honor and something that you should be proud of.
Absolutely.
I know you guys
it makes
work
you realize kind of where
time.
You're at.
And, mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's what it makes you realize where you're at and what you got to do and what's ahead, you know.
Yeah. Well, keep in touch and let me know, because I'd be happy to, you know, post and tweet about it, since you guys don't help you out with that at least. And, you know, any new music that you come up with in the future, you know, I'm sure Doug will get to me and I'll play it on my music show, because you're actually not on my music show. I have a separate show for that. But we've got into the what is the word I'm looking for? Oh, gosh, I lost my word. Doug has always had his guests on this show, which is my original first show, so we've kept it going like that. But I do have a music show that is on Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays, and it's called Take Two Radio Music. I know there's not a lot of thought in that. It's almost the same name, but I'm kind of like trying to stick with the brand, you know. And I'll play your music on my show, definitely.
Cool. Thank you. Appreciate it.
You're very welcome. You're very welcome. I've also just recently started my own radio station online, and it plays all of today's music, classic music, you know, things like that. But I can upload my own music to it, and it plays 24/7 around the world. So eventually your music will be added to the rotation, and it'll be played throughout the world.
That's really great to hear.
Thank you. So I'm going to let you go, but before I do that, did you want to say anything else about see that my grave is kept clean before I play it?
No, I mean, other than the fact that, I mean, it's just a great song. The whole recording of the album for me really was one of the greatest memories of my entire life. It was something that was a long time coming. Really, I feel like it was the first thing that collectively my brothers and I that we have done. It was really the first recording that I think all of us, you know, are really happy about.
Who's that cover by Robert Wilkins?
Yeah, Reverend Robert Wilkins.
Okay. Yeah, so it's a Robert Wilkins cover, and Martin and Nick is actually, our drummer is like a jazz connoisseur. He, like, his favorite is jazz, you know, lots of jazz. But basically,
well, we all have a lot of albums, and Nick Evans, like our drummer, he's got you know, probably almost 1,000 recordings, because back in the day, you know, that's pretty much all we spent our money on when we were kids.
Right.
Martin had the idea that Nick could play this jazz beat at the beginning of See That My Grave Is Kept Clean, a Max Roach beat. I don't know what tune it's from. Bobby, do you know what tune that is, the Max Roach tune?
No. I just know that it had been something that they'd been wanting to work in and use for something.
It was a cool idea, because they took this jazz beat and threw it in this blues country context, and Then basically the next cool step was coming up with this guitar head for it, which I came up with, which is that little guitar riff you hear throughout the song. But I think it's a really, really – Martin did a phenomenal job choosing the covers, you know. And but, yeah, a lot of the old blues players were pastors and whatnot, and, you know, so this is one of those guys. But it's one of my favorite songs on the CD.
Yeah, I actually, I like it too, even though it's a cover, you know, there's nothing wrong with doing a cover. You're just, you know, paying homage to that particular person that you enjoyed listening to in your life.
Yeah.
So thank you so much, guys, for joining me. I really, really had a great time. I did not expect the interview to go this long, but let me tell you, it's not even like an interview. It's more like we're just sitting down chatting about music, and that's what I love about doing this.
Absolutely, yeah. I'm glad that, you know, that we were able to do this. I already said, you know, I mean, I'm watching a terrible Bears game. If I would have been sitting there on the couch the whole time watching this, I would have been cursing, but I have been standing outside on my porch walking in every now and then looking at it. So
I think we neutralized his feelings of the day.
Right.
But I cannot get out of this interview without saying go Bulls and welcome back, Derek Rose. I don't know how many of you are listening or, you know, following basketball, but I am. And I'm going to be ready and hanging out in Grant Park in Chicago in June when the Chicago Bulls dethrone the Miami Heat.
That is wishful thinking there, but, you know, I hope you're right.
Okay, so now there's going to be a brotherly fallout here.
No, he loves Derek Rose.
He's
cautiously optimistic. He's cautiously optimistic. So, not me,
yeah,
I'm ready.
Yeah.
The United States is knocking these days with the Bulls and the Blackhawks, so
yeah.
We can at least agree on that, right?
Right. Definitely. Mm-hmm. We always hope for the best, and when it happens, it's even better yet. It's just icing on the cake.
Cool. All right. Well,
so
yeah, it's been a pleasure talking to you, though.
Thank you. And you guys enjoy the rest of the day. Tomorrow's another work day. Do you guys have day jobs?
I'm
okay.
A music instructor here in town at a local music shop. It's really nice because it actually helped accelerate my learning, you know, because you have to, you know, sitting with other people reveals so much about yourself, obviously, and that's just generally for relationships and in general. But, you know, teaching is you know, invaluable to you know, who I've become.
Definitely. And, you know, just being around people watching, talk to them about their different interests, and especially in music, and everybody grows from that. So that's good.
Yeah.
All
yeah,
right.
And I guess
you
get the influence a lot.
Right.
Anyway,
you guys
I'm not having any fun. It's a Sunday in Chicagoland with the Bears losing 23-10 in Soldier Field to New Orleans. Why not?
The sun is out. Enjoy the day before winter comes.
But I love sledding. No, we have our snowsuits ready here.
Do you? Oh, I can't stand winter. I was always born in the
I love the changing of seasons. I just hate driving in it, but I would not want to live somewhere where the leaves didn't fall. Anyway.
Good for you.
That's my last word.
I mean, thanks again, guys. Have fun.
Right. Bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. And up now is See That My Grave Is Kept Clean by the Planetary Blues Band.
Well,
Great song. See That My Grave Is Kept Clean by the Planetary Blues Band. Be sure to pick up their new album from iTunes, Amazon, CD Baby. You can check out their website. The new album is called Once Upon a Time in the South Loop, and their website is planetarybluesband.com. Also, be sure to go ahead and check out their Facebook page at facebook.com/theplanetarybluesband. Give them a shout out and follow them on Twitter. Who knows? Maybe one day they'll actually get on there and answer you. And it's at Planetary Blues. Check out their website too for any upcoming gigs that they may have, and pictures, videos, press reviews, all that and more is on there. So it's a pretty nice website. You can listen to a lot of their music from there as well. Thank you to all who have joined me today. Thanks again, Mike Lidskin, for joining me as my special guest co-host. And right now he's picking apples and having a grand old time. Join the show tomorrow at 7 p.m. Eastern Time for James C. Burns. He's an actor and now a writer, and he's been in quite a few different movies and TV shows. Sometimes you may recognize a person by their name. Sometimes you recognize them by their face. And sometimes you recognize them from both. But he's one of those actors that are like character actors, and so you may not always recognize his name. But he's been on Criminal Minds. He's been in The Forgotten. He's been on The Young and the Restless. He's been on General Hospital, The Bold and the Beautiful, Burn Notice, CSI New York, Transformers, Prison Break, Proof of Innocence. It's his TV miniseries. Quite a few different things besides being very, very well known as Sergeant Frank Woods of Call of Duty Black Ops 1 and 2. And as I said, he does have a lot of things coming up as far as films and another video that he's going to be involved in. And his new movie that he's written, which is called Nam Zombies. And I can't wait to find out more about that. But you can find out more if you go to Kickstarter.com. He's actually raising the money for that film through Kickstarter, and you write in NAM Zombies, and it comes right up. You can donate anything from $1 on up and help him make this movie, because it's going to be a great movie. He has a video on there that you can check out. He'll tell you what it's about and how you can be involved. You can actually be one of the zombies in the movie. You can play an extra. You can go to a screening of the movie in Chicago, New York, and I believe the other one is Los Angeles. So there's quite a few different ways that you can be involved with it. And join us tomorrow with him at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Take Two Radio, and check out my website at take2radio.com for any upcoming guests, previous podcasts, and more. Follow us on Blog Talk. They'll send you an email each and every time we schedule a show, and that way you won't miss any of the guests that you'd like to listen to. And you're always welcome to call in and speak with one of our guests. The phone number is 1-718-506-1540, and press the number 1 so we know that we need to pick up your phone call. So everybody enjoy the rest of your Sunday, and I hope for you Bears fans out there, something happens in the last few minutes and they at least tie the game. And we'll talk to you soon. Take care. Have a good day, everybody. Bye-bye.